the more you go through, the almost the worse it gets.
What a great two Dodge garage you've got there.
Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the Classics World Chat Show, where we get a chance to chat all things classic cars. And as ever, I'm joined by Jeff Ruggles.
Hello.
And Joe Miller.
Hello.
Okay, chaps. Well, as ever, we're going to go straight into our little news section. Classic Car Buyer, 27th of May edition is a double issue, I believe, Jeff. So we've got hopefully lots to talk about in the news. But what's our headline for this week?
Well, actually, it's a nice little revisit, if you like, because back at the beginning of March, we revealed how the Grand Prix Transport Museum up in Aberdeenshire, bit of coverage for Scotland, so that's nice. We revealed how they were trying to expand, basically, and develop a kind of heritage skills facility. And the manager up there, Ross, was very keen to make it more of an educational facility. And he was seeking funding from the Scottish Government, the Museum's Future Scheme, to be able to do that. And now I'm really pleased to report that it's worked. It's going to happen. So what they're going to do is they're going to open a commercial spec garage, which will double up as a training facility. They'll have a tool library, and they're going to record digitally heritage skills, so those skills aren't lost for the future. So they'll build up like a repertoire of heritage skills that they're going to record and then can be shared with the wider historic community. So it's a really nice thing to do. And it's a really great museum already. We've got some of the ex-Top Gear cars there. And this just adds a nice little extra string to its bow. And it's being funded to the tune of £262,000. So
it's a very precise amount.
It's a brilliant. Bit, well, so it's actually £262,333, if you want me to be really precise. Yeah, it's a really nice thing for them to do. And it's being joint funded by the Museum Futures Scheme and the National Lottery as well. So we've got the National Lottery players to thank for that.
That's excellent, isn't it? It's in all of our interests, isn't it, to preserve this automotive heritage? No greener motoring than keeping existing cars on the road, is there? Let's face it.
Well, that's precisely what they're trying to do, yeah. I mean, with a commercial spec garage, they're able to repair cars, local cars, get them back on the road, but they're also able to future-proof those skills as well. So it's a really, really valuable thing. And Ross is brilliant. His enthusiasm for it is fantastic, and that's just been reflected by the support he's gained.
He's realised to see an angle where there is a future in this for younger generations. I mean, my girlfriend's younger brother, who would love to get into working on cars, the local garage that he's kind of friendly with is like, oh, we're not taking on apprentices or anything like that because it's too complicated and too expensive. It's like, well, he won't be the only one affected by that. So suddenly, if there is opportunity, I think that's brilliant. Whether it's working on old cars or new ones, I think that's fantastic.
Well, what will happen is they obviously will recruit and they'll look for extra volunteers, extra staff, and it could be really lucrative for the area. But the great thing about it is up in Aberdeenshire, there isn't anything like this. I mean, in Scotland, there really isn't anything like this. You've got Bicester Motion down here with the Heritage Skills Academy, which operate at Bicester and Brooklands. But there is a bit of a gap when you get sort of further north. So this is a really nice initiative.
Well, I think we just need to make clear that those career choices are actually really good. They're probably more AI future-proof than many other careers.
AI can't round off a bolt like we can.
Yeah, I think it's very good. Good initiative. It doesn't segue at all, but we're going to go on to our buying topic now. Because I wanted to discuss the most overrated or underrated, or both, we'll do both actually, classics that you can think of. There's plenty of cars that live in folklore that sort of are always eulogized for being these amazing, iconic machines. But actually, they might leave us a little bit cold. So let's have a think about.
There's some that fly under the radar as well that just don't get talked about enough, and they're undervalued and they're under respected and what have you. And I think this is a really interesting topic.
So yeah, let's look at our overrated and underrated choices. So Jeff, why don't you kick us off, sir, with your overrated classic?
This is going to ruffle a few feathers, I think. My overrated choice, bear with me on this, is the Mazda MX-5. Now, before everyone goes mad, let me explain. The first time I drove a Mazda MX-5, it was my ex-girlfriend's mum's. And I thought I just didn't like it. I just didn't bond with it at all.
So the car or the mum?
She was fine. It was just, I whipped out the motorway with the roof down, and I thought, what's all the fuss about? And it kind of turned around a little bit when we had a Mark II, didn't we? 1.6 California, that we took around the NC500. And I really, really loved the MX-5 after that. So this isn't so much of a case of not liking the MX-5 as a car. It's more the fact that it's become the default choice that makes you ignore everything else.
Yeah.
The era. You know, we spoke last week about it, how it affected sales of the Elan M100, which I think is a fantastic car.
Mm.
And I think it's just become that obvious choice that makes you sort of step away from the MGF, step away from the Barchetta, step away from the Elan. And that's why I think it's overrated, because it's just become that obvious choice. It is a very good car, but it makes you ignore all the other very good cars. Do you follow me? I know it's complex and I know it's a bit of a convoluted way.
No, I agree with that.
I look forward to you coming to explain yourself at JapFest in Goodwood in October.
Yeah, so it is a car I like, but it's a car that I think we all just jump to too obviously.
Yeah, maybe I'd agree with that.
Maybe there's a thing with all of us that actually where a car is so widely recognised, whether it's deserved or not, I know I'm a bit of a sucker for the underdog. So actually you tend to sort of steer away from the obvious choice simply because it is the obvious choice. And maybe that's the thing. Maybe it's not overrated, but it is obvious.
Yeah, I just think there's some really cool cars out there that you're sidestepping for that default MX-5.
Yeah. No.
Well, that also affects the values as well, because a good Mark 1 MX-5 now is £4,000-£6,000. And all those rivals that live in its shadow, quite apart from the Elan, are noticeably cheaper. MGFs and Z3s you can pick up for £1,000.
Yeah.
You know, so actually their loss can be your gain potentially.
Yeah. Let's go to Joe's overrated classic. So hit me with it.
If Jeff ruffles some feathers, I'm going to cause shockwaves. I should preface this, as I always do, by saying that I am not a Ford man. I don't come from a Ford family. I've never owned a Ford. I loved our Mark 3 Cortina, but I've not had much experience with Fords beyond that. And my experience with Fords in general is that they have, like you said, Phil, they've had this legendary halo status and these massive values and this massive hype placed on so many of them that for me, they're writing checks they just can't cash. And none more so for me than the Ford Capri. I will stop. First of all, it's a gorgeous looking thing. I agree. Mark 1s and Mark 3s, not so sure about Mark 2s. They are a gorgeous looking car, no denying of that. But dynamically, they're just a bit naff. At best, they're reasonably fast, and at worst, they're genuinely slow. They handle really quite poorly for what they are, to be honest. I think I always find Capris a bit wallowy and a bit vague, and the faster ones in the wet are almost undrivable. They don't ride particularly well. The interiors are no more special than a Cortina. They're nowhere near as good as the hype behind them and the values they command would have you believe. Not to mention, its closest rival, the Opel Manta, for me, is nicer to drive, far more capable, far more practical, and yet cheaper, and doesn't have this halo status behind it. But I genuinely think if the Capri didn't have a Ford badge on it, it wouldn't have anything like the status it has. And for me, every Capri I've driven from a base one up to a 2.8 injection has just felt really underwhelming. And if they were £5,000, you go, okay, fair enough. But when they're 20 or 30 or 40 grand, I think, no, I cannot see the value or the merit in this at all.
Is your kind of attention more on the later cars, which by then are quite archaic?
I don't see a single Capri, really, that can justify the hype and the value that it has. And I know that's going to be controversial, but...
I'm not sure you could label it about the early ones.
If you square a Capri up to a Manta or a Mark 1 Scirocco or even a more traditional sports car like an MGB, I don't see that they deliver on it. I don't see where the value is in it.
I will just say, I think the early Capri has a role as kind of an underrated people's car in that it gave people a sporty option to suit all pockets.
Just to be clear, I'm talking about it in modern day context. In historic context, I agree, the Capri is hugely significant. But in a modern context where a good one is 20 or 30 or 40 grand and they drive like an underwhelming, wallowy sofa, I don't get the values in them. I know I'm going to get some flame in the comments for this, so by all means, do comment down below with your thoughts. But a lot of Fords are overpriced and overhyped in my eyes, but none more so than the Capri.
I think Phil needs to step in and save us.
Well, Joe will be at Ford Fair on the 23rd of August.
Wearing a hoodie and sunglasses, I think.
Yeah. Well, controversially, I'm not going to save Joe, and I'm probably going to put myself even further in hot water because my overrated choice is also a Ford.
Ooh.
It's even more baffling when you consider that I've owned two of these cars and my mother has owned two of these cars as well. And it is the Ford Escort.
Oh, okay.
Now, I'll give this a little bit more context because I asked the question for you, Joe, about the Capri and whether it was all generations of Capri. With the Escort, I think the overratedness is in direct proportion to the subsequent generations. The more you go through, almost the worse it gets. And I think there's almost a sweet spot around Mark 3 and 4 where the overratedness is at its peak because the underwhelmingness of the car is also quite high. So Mark 1 Escort, I think, I mean, Jeff, you mentioned about when the first Capri came out. I think I agree. I think actually it was beautiful. It added something new to the market that wasn't quite MGB, but it wasn't boring saloon or anything like that. It was that perfect middle ground. Mark 1 Escort arguably was the really sensible evolution to that sort of compact family car. And of course, it had all those halo models like the Mexicos and things like that. And it was probably quite competitive. But I think that, you know, you go through sort of the Escort history, you get to the Escort front-wheel drive Mark 3, and even though you've then got the halo models, by then it's not as competitive as it could have been. They only drive okay, I think. Mm. And yet the market values of these cars is eye-wateringly high considering the capabilities of the competitive products that are out there. I don't think it really ever had the high point. Like a Cortina was, I think, a high point at Mark 3, which therefore sustained it throughout Mark 4 and 5. So I don't know. I expect to be utterly mauled at the next Ford show I go to, because I love Fords. And actually, I don't care that an XR3i doesn't drive as well as a 309 GTI or a Golf GTI or something. But I do balk when I look at an RS Turbo Mark 4 that's sort of up for 20 or 30 grand. I think, why is it that much money?
I think this is it. I think much like the Capri, a lot of the hype behind the Escort comes down to the badge that's on it, where if an Escort was badged as a Vauxhall Viva, I genuinely think if you change nothing else but it was badged as a Vauxhall Viva, they'd be worth half as much. Genuinely.
Yeah. Marketing was clever and nostalgia is a powerful thing.
Absolutely. It really is.
I think that's a very good way to wrap up the overrated section.
So no, I'd agree with that.
So Jeff, let's redeem our love of blue ovals. What, give us an underrated classic.
Well, you sort of led me in quite nicely there, haven't you? I'm gonna come to Ford's rescue here, I think. And my underrated classic choice is a modern classic. But it's the original. Let's have to get that in there. Ford Puma. Yes.
Oh, of course.
The 1997 in 1.7 form. They often get lambasted for being based on the Fiesta, and just we've done videos on them in the past, and you all sort of, you know, took the mic, you know, nice Fiesta, all the rest of it. Mm. Because inside, you know, a lot of the trim is similar and the platform is the same. The image problem, there's the fact they do rust really quite badly. They've got their faults. You know, you open the boot, all your shopping gets wet, things like that. But you just have to drive a good 1.7 to really appreciate how great they are. They're just short gearing, so much fun.
You ran that project Puma for us, and I think it's safe to say that you fell in love with that car. That was a really good...
But I didn't fall in love with it over a period of time. I fell in love with it within about 5 minutes. This thing is incredible. You know, despite being low geared, it still had legs. It handled really well.
Yeah.
You know, it had the variable valve timing, so it's a bit sparkly when you gave it some. It had a milled alloy gear knob as standard. I run out of superlatives for it. It was just such a great car to drive. And you've got to remember, it was £1,200.
And they're still, I know they've gone up a little bit in value, but actually they're still relatively affordable, aren't they?
They are still relatively affordable. And I reckon if you put one round, you know, Anglesey or something, it would see off an RS Turbo.
It probably would. That's a fair comment. Yeah, you know. I think there's a cracking little car. I think the Puma is it's quite nice that you followed on with that after talking about the Capri and the Escort, because the Puma is rare in Ford land in that I think it's undervalued and underhyped, which is very rare for a Ford.
Yeah. And it's just indicative of sort of the Parry Jones era, isn't it? Of how he really sorted the chassis out and just made them so fun to drive.
Yeah.
Yes, you have to search for one that hasn't got patches all over it, but... If you do find one, they're tremendous.
I think that's a great choice. And actually, you know, we were talking about how, you know, Capri versus Manta, and maybe the Capri isn't as competitive as a Manta and so on. The Puma against the Tigra.
Yes.
It's leagues ahead.
The Puma is infinitely better. So,
yeah, leagues ahead.
Yeah, I think that's an absolute top choice. So, Joe, you've got to go some to beat that one. Go on, go for it.
Do you know what? In the world of classics, a brand stood out to me. Having made the point just now about how kind of overhyped and overvalued quite a lot Fords are, conversely, I think a lot of Vauxhalls are very underhyped and undervalued, a lot of them across the board. But the one I wanted to nominate for this in particular was the Vauxhall Cavalier. And I'm going to focus on the Mark III, because anyone who's driven a Mark III Cavalier is always amazed at how good it is. They still feel so modern. They're incredibly well built. I think they still look great. They're really practical. You could still feasibly run a Mark III Cavalier every day today, but it's such a great all-round car, and it shows up. We did that twin test of Sierra versus Cavalier last year, and the Mark III Cavalier shows up how dated and how archaic the Sierra was by that point. I think the Cavalier across the board, all three generations of Cavalier were great, but the Mark III for me is a great car, and yet you don't hear anyone talking about them, and they don't achieve anything like the values or the, again, the status that even the standard Sierra does, let alone the hot ones. So I think that the Mark III Cavalier in particular is a real unsung hero.
I think a Mark III Cavalier might be a really good modern classic choice, actually. I don't think I'd even need to go kind of super Larry GSI turbo, like a V6 Diplomat edition or something like that, with leather trim and all that kind of stuff would probably be really good.
Something that sums it up for me is my brother is lovely chap, but he's quite neglectful when it comes to cars. And he had a M-Reg 1.8 Cavalier that he never serviced, never washed. And I borrowed it once and I was like, this is great. You know, it just took the abuse. And when it did need something, parts were cheap.
Yeah.
They're really good. I know we do these sort of peak brand era videos quite a lot, but that could well be peak Vauxhall.
Do you know what? I wouldn't disagree with that. And not to mention, if the normal Cavalier is not interesting enough for you, the Calibra, which again, we've touched on before. Calibra is a really underrated car. Great car.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. That's my
beautiful looking car as well.
Oh God, yeah. And compared to a Ford Pro, well, say no more.
Yeah. I need.
If Vauxhall is almost the other side of the Ford coin, where Fords are sometimes overrated, Vauxhalls often don't get the love and the attention that they deserve. So. Yeah, that's really interesting.
What's your unsung hero?
Well, shock horror, lads. I'm going for a Jaguar.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm going for the Jaguar S-Type, as in 1998 to 2007. The styling puts loads of people off, which I totally get, particularly those early ones. They look a bit awkward, and the interior is gopping on those early cars. It just looks like they commissioned it by Fisher-Price. The facelift models that came out 2002 model year, where they improved the interior and they integrated the bonnet badge into the grille. Because I don't think people know that the early cars have got a plain grille with a badge on the bonnet, because underneath the badge on the European cars is actually the bolt holes for the Leaper, which was on the US cars.
Okay.
So that's why you've got this really plain, nondescript grille, which they've sort of bought out of Matalan or something like that. It's just not very...
It's off an air conditioning thing.
Really basic, yeah.
Other discount stores are available.
Exactly. But anyway, so they integrated the badge into the grille from the 02 cars. And then you get the 2005 model, which was slightly tweaked further by Callum, so that the side profile was altered. The rear end was changed. Put to one side your misgivings about how it looks, they actually drive really well. The sort of rear drive layout, and you get a well-sorted V6, or even better, the V8. It's extraordinary. It's a really good car. I bought an S-Type R with about 98,000 miles on the clock. It was reliable. It was comfortable. It was quick. It was spacious inside for four people, decent-sized boot and all that kind of stuff. So it was just, I don't know. For me, it's a car that gets overlooked because obviously it isn't the XJ.
I think they're and yet, despite all of that, they're still worth next to nothing. Bar the R's, you can get a standard one for 1,500 quid.
Yeah.
I mean, they do rot. It's worth noting they do know how to rot, but they're great.
I think it was underrated then, and I think it's still underrated now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, so there we go. Some good choices there, gents. So stuff that's coming up, guys. What are we up to in the foreseeable future? Jeff, you're normally our man about. What's
It's a quiet weekend because I've got something big the following weekend, in truth.
Exciting. Tell us about that on next week's podcast.
Yes, I will. I managed to finally get my Mini on the road this week.
Excellent.
I took it to a local classic car meeting at a Somerset pub that I go to once a month. And it was really good. It's a bit windy. So the normal three fields full of cars was down to one, but it was a really good meet. Lots of variety. So that was fun.
I love stuff like that. You often find some real hidden gems at car meets like that, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have really good food vans as well, so
Oh, well, that's the one we know. That's better than cooking yourself, isn't it? So that's good. What about you, Joe?
I've not got much car stuff planned. I've alluded in recent podcasts to how I'm trying to do all the snagging list on my two cars, all these little jobs that need doing. The Fiat added one to its own list this week by springing a water leak in the boot, which was great when it started raining. So I've had to have that all pulled to bits and stripping it down and resealing bits and sanding down little bits of rust and painting those up. And the car's currently in 15,000 pieces across our living room, much to the delight of my girlfriend. So yeah, that's my weekend project is putting the back end of my Fiat back together.
Very good. Very good. I do really want to try and get to the Jaguar Day at Bicester coming up tomorrow, Saturday, as of if you listen to this on the Friday. It's obviously going to be a fantastic collection of Jaguars. I think Jaguar Daimler Heritage Trust and Jaguar Classic are supporting it with various items from the collection. So a good sort of rostrum of guest speakers like Ian Callum, who's always good value. If you've never been to a thing with Ian Callum speaking, do it, because he's always got a story to tell. And he was pretty open and candid even when he had a PR person over his shoulder. He's even more so now he's got a PR person watching his every word. So he's definitely worth it. But it's not something we're up to. It's something we did yesterday, Joe, that I wanted to also just check, because I'll give you a little sneak preview. Joe and I were recording three cars for the YouTube channel yesterday, and it was a fabulous day. I really enjoyed it. We had a Ford Sierra Runout Edition as Euro model, a hatchback model in Moondust Silver. We had a Mark III Cortina, but not just any Mark III, but it was an early pre-facelift GXL model.
Whoa.
Absolutely fabulous. And then this fantastic E28 5 Series, 528 manual, a proper brutish Bavarian beauty. It was brilliant. It was just fantastic. Three lovely owners as well, weren't they, Joe?
Oh, fantastic. We're always grateful to any owners that lend us their cars for videos, but these three in particular were so enthusiastic. They were so lovely, and they're more than willing to help out with driving cars up and down for photos and whatever. Have to give a massive shout out to the three of you. Were all brilliant, and thank you for bringing your cars down. So yes, stay tuned on the channel. There's videos and all those coming. And without giving too much away, that E28 is going right up there as one of my favourite cars that I've driven so far this year. It was fabulous. Stay tuned for the video.
I also just want to give a little bit of a shout out, because MG Enthusiast magazine is out today, as of Friday, and we've got a new section in MG Enthusiast magazine, which I really would welcome some feedback on. So do go and check it out. It's got basically the editor, Craig Cheatham, who will be familiar to people on this channel, has introduced an Austin Rover section. So it's still called MG Enthusiast, but we've introduced this Austin Rover section because obviously it's an interesting period in the whole life cycle of, and we touched upon it last week a bit with the British Leyland piece, but the Austin Rover era, obviously you don't see any actual MG cars. You see MG badge derivatives of Austin Rover cars. So the segue into talking about Maestros and Montegos and things like that isn't actually as jarring as it might first seem. So there's a great little history piece about the Maestro, and Jeff, you probably know a fair bit about Maestros. Maybe that's an underrated car. You know, you talk about underrated sort of classics.
Yeah, actually.
You know, it's...
I've got a lot of time for a Maestro.
So it'd be really interesting to know what readers of MG Enthusiasts think of an Austin Rover section. We've not gone mad. I think it's only a few pages, but I think it's good to honour those 80s British classics, you know, whether it's got an MG badge on the front or not. So, do check that out. I think that's worth taking a look at. So, look, wrapping up, gents, as ever, our final section is the cars that have piqued your interest this week, that have got you poring over the classifieds. So, Jeff, what's been floating your boat?
Oh, you're like this because it's right off your street. A Jaguar!
Hooray!
Yay! Hurrah! More specifically, Series 1 XJ.
Oh.
And the reason for this, a couple of them have come up at auction recently. There's the one that you drove, Joe, up at Morris Leslie.
That went
through auction this weekend. That was a 4.2 car with something like 30,000 miles on the clock. That went for $12,625, which I thought was an excellent buy.
Yes, that's good, not value. Bad, is it?
And down at Historics, there was a 17,000 mile XJ6. The 2.8, obviously quite rare, that did nearly £17,000, and it was just immaculate. It was white with the red leather interior, and it just looked lovely. And at that car meet that I went to on Tuesday was a Series 1 Daimler Sovereign. So I've had my full fix of Series 1 this week. And of course, I just love the way they look. I love the low front bumper that doesn't quite match the back bumper. I just love that sort of imposing front end. And I just want one. I like a slightly ratty one to smoke around in.
Proper with no nice with a back bumper hanging off.
But yeah, kind of like just robbed the bank spec.
Yeah.
You know.
Good choice. Excellent. What about you, Joe?
Oh, well, I'm still looking at 911s, aren't I? Regular listeners to this new format of the podcast will know that about a month ago now, we went to Paragon Porsche and I drove a 997 911, which has been my dream car for years. And unfortunately, I can't move on from it. I'm still, if I even show up in looking at them for sale. There you go, gents. Here's a, I show you on the camera. That's a 997 Carrera 2S manual coupe with the lobster claw wheels, which is exactly how I would have it. I wouldn't choose black, but as I've said before, any colour would do. That will cost you £22,000 and it's less than an hour from my house. So I'm picking that up this afternoon. No, I'm not picking that up this afternoon. I couldn't afford it. But I'm still massive. The 997 bug has bit me hard. And I'm already in my head looking far ahead like, okay, right, in 8 or 9 years' time, the mortgage will be done. And then maybe I can, you know, it's that I'm already kind of thinking that far ahead. But if you want your fix of Porsches that aren't a heathen with water cooling, go and check out the Classics World channel this Sunday, where Phil is driving the 993 911, the air-cooled version, and you rather like that, didn't you?
That's a proper meet your heroes thing, and it didn't disappoint, actually. Not going to lie. I could have stayed out in that car all day.
Yeah, exactly. So my want of the week and the want of my life is a 997, and it always will be.
Well, I'm gonna really sort of change tack somewhat on this, because I had an utterly random rabbit hole I went down the other day, because I don't know what prompted it, but basically I started looking at Dodges for sale. Dodge. Yeah. Plenty of dodgy Dodges. I don't even know what spurred it on, other than that I just thought, well, there's a mark you just don't see very often. And then I sort of, basically what then, I must have seen one on the road, basically. And then I went into the classifieds and started looking at Dodges for sale. Even sounds wrong, doesn't it? Dodge over in the UK, at least, just has had this really sporadic history, hasn't it? So it can mean lots of things to lots of people. So on the one hand, you've got this 2009 Dodge Journey, which I think is like a Mercedes R-Class or something underneath. I think it's something like that. It's not a real Dodge. It's up for £750, like as a family hack thing. Like, what could possibly go wrong? But then on the flip side, you've got this Hemi V8 Dodge Charger thing.
Is that a Hellcat? Sorry,
for £130,000.
What a great two Dodge garage you've got.
Yeah, exactly. I did sort of see a 1972 Dodge Challenger, which is up for £26,000. A random mark that we don't really see or appreciate much here in the UK. No. But I don't know. As a fan of Dukes of Hazzard, you know, and all that kind of stuff, it's still a brand that resonates in the back of my mind somewhere. But anyway, well, that probably concludes this week's episode of the Classics World Chat Show. Jeff, Joe, thank you very much for your time, as ever.
Pleasure as always.
Viewers and listeners at home, thank you very much for your time. If you're watching this on YouTube, don't forget give us a like and a subscribe if you don't mind. And if you're listening to it on a podcast platform of your choice, give us a follow and make sure you get notified when a new episode drops. It's every Friday.
Must just mention, we just hit 75,000 subscribers, by the way, on YouTube. So massive thank you to everyone for that. That's brilliant.
Yes, thank you. Your ongoing support is much appreciated, and it's lovely to have you along for the ride. But anyway, in the meantime, thank you very much for your time. We'll see you again next week.
See ya. Bye-bye.